Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Offense Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. A little bit later on in the show, I got the chance to talk to Dietrich Wise today, the Commanders defensive lineman, new signee for New England. We'll get to that a little bit later, 6:30. Also, there was a big story in the Baltimore Sun yesterday about some deep dive reporting into the exit for Kevin Willard at Maryland and Damon Evans, the athletic director. We'll talk to one of the writers who investigated and wrote that piece coming up at 5:30. Right now, though, it's time for Not My Beat. Ben Standig, Commanders beat reporter for The Athletic, joins us. Ben, good to see you today, my friend. Appreciate your time here on the radio this afternoon. How you doing?
Well, Craig, you texted me about an hour ago, and I was already 30 minutes in my drive home. I'm still not home. Traffic was horrendous the American Legion Bridge. So, yeah, so I'm fine, but, traffic today was an abomination.
Well, you should have just stayed and done this in person, hung out with me, Ben, and then you would have been fine. You know, you could have just co-hosted the whole show, and then you probably might have gotten home at the exact same time.
If I had known, that would have been a much better deal. Yeah, fortunately, yeah. I'd already made a pit stop at Chick-fil-A on the way home, so at least I was not starving and stuck in traffic.
That is good. Hangry and in traffic is about my nightmare combination. I just don't know how that gets worse without something truly heinous happening. So I'm happy you were at least fed with some quality chicken. All right. It's a game. You ready for this, Ben? It's a game of chicken.
Sure.
Between the Commanders and Terry McLaurin. Yeah, that's nice. Professional segue there.
That's why you're professional.
Yeah. What have you been able to glean from both sides here on, because that is kind of where I'm at, is like, what's the disagreement? I mean, we just don't really seem to know at this point. Have you been able to glean any information on where the separation is and why this has stretched into mandatory minicamp where McLaurin was not here in Ashburn today?
Yeah, you know, the team is, you know, not talking much as we've seen under Adam Peters. They've typically not put out a ton of information. I don't know if this is the sole reason, but it feels like, and I've talked about this before or written about it a little bit, ultimately the money is the issue on some level, right? Because, that's what we're talking about. And I feel like the divide there a little bit is the production versus the age. You know, if you look at the top 16 receivers right now, Terry McLaurin is 16th in terms of annual average value. He's like $23.2 million. This is, you know, for the last three-year deal that he had signed back in 2022. And, you know, obviously he's been passed by a lot of other receivers since. And then if you look at the names above him, of those 15 names, only Tyreek Hill is currently older than Terry McLaurin, who turns 30 in September. Now, he's hardly old, right? He's been durable. He doesn't even have that much wear and tear on him relative to the age because, you know, he didn't play a ton at Ohio State on offense. You know, he kind of had to wait his turn a little bit. But I feel like that may be the difference maker because when you look at some of the names, like where he should be getting paid, like this offseason, DK Metcalf got, you know, high $32 million. T. Higgins signed with the Bengals. He's around, like, high $28 million. Right? Okay, so somewhere, like, in between those two guys feels like a reasonable spot based on what McLaurin has produced, his impact on this team, the locker room, all those things. And also, if $30 million is right where Brandon Ayuk is, you know, you can make an argument that McLaurin's better Tyreek Hill's at $30 million. Amon-Ra St. Brown's at $30 million. They're all very good. But, you know, is McLaurin right there with them? I mean, you can make the case after the year he just had, or at least, you know, squint hard enough to get you there. But I wonder if that may be as much of the divide as anything, that, you know, it may be an arbitrary number. When you get on the other side of 30 at certain positions, you know, production starts to drop, and wide receiver, you know, can be one of those spots. You know, you start to lose a little bit of speed. As good as Terry is, he's never been like the great separator. That's why he's always getting all these contested catches, because he's not necessarily, you know, running past people. So that to me feels like perhaps a sticking point. Again, I don't know for sure that it's the sticking point, but, you know, in terms of the money, it seems to me it shouldn't be that complicated to slot him somewhere in that $30 million range, unless you're saying, well, the other guys who are in that range are all typically 2 to 3 years younger than you, again, other than Tyreek Hill, and that has to be factored in from the team's perspective, and maybe it isn't from McLaurin's angle.
That certainly feels like it would be something to quibble over. Do you have strong feelings, and are you comfortable giving them, of which side of that argument you think is more valid?
I mean, I guess I can kind of see it from both sides. You know, it's funny, when McLaurin signed his extension back in 2022, and you look, same deal, he skipped some OTAs, he skipped the mandatory minicamp, and then eventually, you know, during the summer, before training camp, he signs the three-year deal, like $71 million roughly. The player at that point had the leverage over the team, because the Commanders, you know, as you may recall, Craig, had nothing but negative press at that point, right?
Yeah.
So the idea of, you know, messing around with Terry McLaurin was, you know, not an option from a fan perspective. And so they got the deal done. I'm not saying it was, you know, he got paid, overpaid. I'm just saying they got the deal done. Here, I mean, look, if the team wants, as much as they've talked about, you know, the culture and all these types of things, it is still a business. Dan Quinn, you know, referenced that today. Sometimes football and business, you know, collide. And, you know, I can see if the team is saying, hey, look, we love Terry McLaurin, but we got Jaden Daniels here. Like, we'll get receivers. Like, we're not worried about guys being able to for him to throw to and get guys open. That's when you have a great quarterback. You don't necessarily have to have the higher end guys. And again, as good as McLaurin is, I mentioned the age. He's not the fastest guy. He's fast for humans, but he's not relatively fast to like the guys who are at the top of, you know, the fastest guys in the league. He's definitely not the biggest guy, either in size or bulk. He's a really good route runner. I don't think he's Puka Nacua type guy. So it's like, again, this is if I'm nitpicking it from the team perspective. I can understand that. I guess, but for me, I just sort of was buying that there would be at least a, like, he's the first guy. Like, they re-signed Sam Cosmi last year, which is fine. But, like, Terry's like the first, like, okay, he's on the poster for this team. Here's our guy. We got to figure this out. And they're, if they don't just, you know, I don't want to say hand them the money, but if they don't, you know, if they quibble this thing out and they really kind of drag it out, I guess it would be a little surprising based on where I thought things were. But again, if that may just be, hey, the kumbaya part of this is over and now we have to make business decisions, and that's where we're at. So I guess I can see it both ways, not to play the middle. I definitely get where Terry would be coming from, but, you know, age is, you know, father time doesn't lose. So if they think that in, you know, 2 years, this, you know, paying him an average of, you know, $30 million a year doesn't make sense for them, well, that's potentially a viable option. I just, you know, it's hard to say, looking at what Terry has done, that there's a drop-off coming. But how often do you see drop-offs come?
Right. Ben Standing's with us here on the Hoffman Show. Last thing on Terry, then we can get to everyone else. Because I think what you just laid out is the conundrum, and it's why this is so complicated, because it's very easy to point out all of the quote-unquote flaws in Terry's game of not the biggest, not like his speed is probably the most elite trait, but he's 4.3, you know, high 4.3s, not low 4.3s, right? He's not, you know, he's not the same explosive athlete as Jamar Chase is, making $40 million a year and winning the Triple Crown. He's not the greatest separator. He's an awkward catcher of the football. But at some point, you also look at the 7 years of production and just go, yeah, and that's mattered exactly when? And, like, it, in some ways, Ben, I know you'll appreciate this as a basketball guy, too. It's, like, it's kind of the Knicks-Thibodeau thing. And even though I agree more with the Knicks firing Thibodeau than I do with the Commanders making some of these arguments about Terry McLaurin, it's like, oh, Tibbs doesn't play – he plays his starters too much, or he does this, or he's not flexible enough here. And it's like, okay, so does he not make the playoffs or lose in the first round every year? Oh, no, he just took us to the Eastern Conference Finals. And it's like, okay, well, then eventually we're missing something in the equation here because that's pretty damn good. And that's kind of how I feel about Terry is you can try to detail this up till the cows come home, but eventually you're so far into the forest or so far into the trees that you're missing the forest here. And that's kind of what I feel like is happening right now with Terry.
Yeah, and I'll just add on, like, if the age thing is a main part of the issue, you know, for to benefit Terry here, like, okay, sure, he's turning 30, but he doesn't have the wear and tear of a 30-year-old, largely, you know, again, because at Ohio State, he didn't play. Right. He wasn't like a three-year starter or something because, you know, they had so many guys. He was, you know, playing special teams and all that. So he doesn't have that type of issue. So, you know, he's arguably younger if we're talking mileage, but obviously, you know, again, how do you judge that for sure? It's hard to say.
It is. Ben Stanig's with us, Hoffman Show, here on the Team 980. Of course, Commanders beat reporter for The Athletic, the Last Man Standing podcast as well. You can check out wherever you get your pods. I believe he did a walk and talk with Nikki Javala today that did get crashed by Sam Fortier. Is that what I saw happening?
Yeah, she and I were trying to connect to do my podcast four different times over the last 36 hours, and things kept coming up. So we were just standing there, you know, BSing, watching practice. I'm like, hey, why don't you do this now? So we started to do it, and then like 6 minutes in, they canceled practice, and we had to go to work. So, But Sam Forte took video, I believe, of that. I'm sure it'll win an Academy Award or something.
Yes, obviously an Academy Award, potentially also a Golden Globe, TBD on just how many awards that'll win from the cinematography of Sam Fortier. All right, so when you look at the rest of what you've seen over the last couple of weeks and especially today in minicamp, these things are so hard to judge on any kind of big picture. But I kind of take a look at like, oh, you know, even the play that where Debo scores the touchdown, right? It's like, that's a really nice play by Debo Samuel. I can evaluate Debo without, you know, while also saying like, I don't know how good of a play that was for the offense because it also took a bunch of times and Ken Norton is yelling at Jaden Daniels after that, hey man, you would have been sacked. Like that didn't count. So is there anybody, you know, context notwithstanding that has stood out to you, especially today on day one of the mandatory minicamp that you're like, I'm really excited to watch that guy again tomorrow and then when we get back out here in late July, early August?
Well, I will just say, to that point, if it's hard to figure out, you know, for certain positions, particularly on the line and the run game, it's borderline not even a discussion point because there's no pads, no tackling. And the fact that Dan Quinn has like said that essentially multiple times, you know, when we've asked things like, how's, you know, the run defense looking relative to last year? Or what about the offensive line? He's like, you know, all I can look at right now is the mental part of it. Do they know the playbook? You know, how hard are they working? Those types of things. So I think that's an important aspect of this. I mean, I will just say that, you know, I'm really intrigued in the running back room by Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt when they get to training camp. I just said that it's hard to gauge running backs, and that is true. I like the element that he brings of that, you know, one cut burst off the field, and he's a little bit bigger than I think I thought. Just looking at the numbers, and I talked to Anthony Lynn the other day, the running back coach, and he kind of said the same thing. And I don't know, I'm not saying he's going to start or even necessarily crack the rotation since they brought back the three guys from last year, but he does bring an element that they don't have, and I'm curious to see if he gets more run, no pun intended, what that looks like going forward. The offensive line, again, I keep pointing out the things I just said are hard to gauge, but, you know, like, Laremy Tunsil was out there today. Tomorrow, I think I want to take a little closer look at how he's looking out there, just moving around. But, you know, we still have to wait to see, is Josh Connerly going to be the right tackle? They've been playing, you know, Andrew Wiley is still there. Brandon Coleman's been playing some guard. You know, how does that play out and so on? And, I think that's, again, we may not get a better feel for that until deep in the training camp or the preseason games, but I do want to see how that looks. And then, you know, I would just say cornerback. I think Trey Amos has had some pretty good moments, you know, all things, as he said, context appropriate moments. But Marshon Lattimore was out there today. You know, Dan Quinn told us no restrictions, you know, he's out there. Okay, well, let me, I still want to see it, though. I want to see him, you know, run full speed, you know, does he make it through every day? Do they have to, you know, restrict him at all in terms of his participation? Hopefully he can go because, you know, he and I think Jerron Payne to me are the two guys. How they go this season is the biggest variance is on the defense. If they are playing at good levels, then this team could definitely go up a notch or two from where they were a year ago. If they don't, then, you know, this team may not have any real difference makers or not many of them besides, like, say, Frankie Louvu. And all of a sudden now you're looking at a team that's going to struggle to, you know, stop teams from moving the ball.
Ben Standig with us here on the Hoffman Show. When you look at the tight end room, Logan and I talked about it a little bit this morning on Take Command, and it's a really interesting room because they have just a bunch of freaky athletes in there beyond the guys that we think will probably make the team. Like Tyree Jackson, 6'7", walking around and moves great, former quarterback. You're like, man, that guy's... I don't know if it clicks like that. That feels dangerous. You know, Colson Yankoff, obviously a great special teams player last year. And then all eyes beyond, you know, Zach Ertz just keeps finding his way open and is making plays all over the place. And you're like, okay, got that. Glad he's back. But Ben Sinnott is the guy that I think is the wild card here. What have you not just seen, Ben, here in these couple of weeks of OTAs from Sinnott, but what have you heard when you talk to other people about him in and around the building of kind of what didn't click for him last year and what you expect and what they expect going into this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think last year, at the end of the day, they got, you know, way more out of Zach Ertz than they could imagine. Just his ability to play, you know, just being available for the whole season, you know, that did not seem likely based on his recent injury history. And obviously John Bates is going to be on the field in two tight end sets. He's the blocker. Benson is not big enough to really be that guy. And, you know, he's not as seasoned, obviously, as Zach Ertz as the pass catcher part. They use three tight ends at times, but not a ton. So, you know, he never really got any runway. You know, if Zach Ertz even misses, say, two games, you know, then that would be an opportunity for Sinnott to get out there and show something as a pass catcher. But he's never really kind of got going, and you know, he did have the catch from Tressway in the postseason. But I wonder what's going to change this year. Like, it's hard to see a scenario. Again, Zach Ertz maybe misses games, but other than that, it's kind of hard to see a scenario where Sinnott is, like, forcing his way into the lineup. You know, again, unless Ertz, you know, hits a wall and all of a sudden he's, you know, half the guy he was a year ago, which I'm not anticipating at this point. So I think that's kind of the rub. Sometimes it's, you know, he's just blocked by the other guys. But I think, you know, if he can be a little better as a route runner, you know, present himself as a viable target when he gets some open space, I think those things go a long way towards helping the cause. And look, if Zach Ertz does have a dip in play at all, you know, Sinnott's obviously significantly younger, and, you know, they like his abilities as a pass catcher, as a, you know, a guy that they can line up in a bunch of different spots, including fullback. So, you know, there's a versatility aspect to him that could be intriguing, but I just, unless Zach Ertz gets hurt or, you know, misses time for whatever the reason, it's hard to just see how Sinnott's getting on the field a lot, but hopefully he's still, you know, they like the development, so when the time comes, he's ready to go.
Yeah, the way he gets on the field to me is in two tight end sets where they want to run the football, and then obviously he'll get opportunities in the pass game, play actioning off of that. But he needs to actually know what he's doing and do it at a high level in the run game in order to make that viable, and that is something that he struggled with at times last year. So, well, that's a great point because it's, you know, they're not just going to take Zach Ertz off the field just to be like, hey, Sinnott, go out there and run around when Zach Ertz is as good as Zach Ertz has been. Ben Standig writing about all of this at The Athletic, the Commanders beat reporter for that fine outlet. And, of course, check out the Last Man Standig podcast as well. Ben, appreciate your time, sir. Hope the traffic has relented and you are getting closer to home, and it is much better for you to and fro tomorrow.
I have made it to out of the traffic. I'm back to freedom. Very excited about that.
Excellent.
Appreciate that everybody is you know, worrying about that. But yeah, so we're good. Thanks for having me on, Craig. And yeah, I'll see you out there.
All right, sounds good. That's Ben Standig with us here on the Hoffman Show. When we get back, are one turn away from the Commanders today to talk with someone who wrote one of the stories that powered our show yesterday. Big Baltimore Sun investigation into what went down at the University of Maryland that led to both the exits of athletic director Damon Evans and head basketball coach Kevin Willard. One of the writers of that story joins us next on Team 980.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. We'll get back to the Commanders coming up at 6 o'clock. Our pick 6 at 6, where you'll hear from Dan Quinn and more. Dietrich Wise, Commanders defensive lineman, at 6:30. Right now, though, our one Commanders turn away today goes to a story that we talked about yesterday. One of the writers of it, or the writer of it, joins us now. Taylor Lyons, a sports reporter for the Baltimore Sun, and he has spent the last couple of weeks and really probably last month and change diving into what the heck happened at the University of Maryland, where, of course, Kevin Willard ultimately exited as the men's basketball coach. Damon Evans also exiting as the athletic director, and found some interesting stuff. So, Taylor, appreciate your time. Great work, first of all, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Going on. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, thank you. And let me start off here, Taylor. Like, you obviously knew a lot, as many of us did, going into this based off what was said in public. Like, so much of this played out publicly, which in some ways was the issue at hand here. So what ultimately did you find that you felt was new and important as you started to dive into this story?
Yeah, so I don't think I was breaking any news by saying Kevin Willard and Damon Evans didn't like each other. I think that was pretty well known.
Right.
I think the thing that surprised me, though, was how far back this went and just the overall scope of it. I mean, the very first quote in the story from Harry Geller, who ran NIL for the Maryland men's basketball team, said that Willard was unhappy, you know, from the first week he met him in 2022. He said, Willard said, his first week on the job, I've never seen a place that cares less about winning in basketball than Maryland. And then, you know, that kind of festers over the next 3 or so years. And there were points where it kind of bubbled up and became public. I mean, Damon Evans, back this past January, went on the radio and said, hey, Kevin, you got to start winning some more road games. And that kind of agitated Kevin a little bit. And then obviously the infamous press conference right before the NCAA tournament where Willard kind of divulges Evans' plans. He says he's probably going to SMU. No one knew that at the time. Even, you know, those Evans' closest allies in the athletic department didn't know that. So led to a really, you know, kind of messy kind of falling out that I kind of described in the piece, that, you know, that frustration that bubbled over the 3 years Willard was in College Park and then finally kind of spilled over for everyone to see.
So what I think is interesting about the piece, Taylor, there's a lot of interesting things in the piece, but one of the things that in terms of that relationship is funny, interesting, weird, is that there's a lot of folks, or at least a couple folks that you cite, that think Willard would have stayed if Evans had stayed. Is that a fair, like, did I read that correctly? That even though these two did not like each other and did not get along, that it was still in some ways a very productive, even if not beneficial for either of their health, productive relationship, and perhaps Willard would still be at Maryland if Evans was still the AD?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I would kind of push back maybe a little bit on, I think the quote you're referencing from the one booster who I spoke with, who, you know, met with athletic department officials regularly. He said that, you know, he thought Willard would stay if Damon had also stayed, like you just mentioned. I think I would kind of push back on that. I think Willard had kind of been looking for an exit for a little bit, and so had Damon Evans. So he did say in the tournament that, you know, I don't have anyone to negotiate with. I don't have anyone to negotiate a new deal with. I need this, this, and this, and I don't have anyone to talk to for it. So, yeah, I don't know. I think they had both been kind of looking at their own exit strategies for, you know, probably dating back a few months, maybe even years, who's to say. But, I don't know if Willard would have stayed even if Damon did.
Gotcha. So the quote accurate, the whether or not that person is actually correct in their assessment, that is at the very least up for debate. Taylor Lyons, sports reporter for the Baltimore Sun, with us here on the Hoffman Show. So when you look at the types of things that Willard was complaining about and why he said that incredibly damning quote that you already referenced of, I've never seen a place that cares about winning less than the University of Maryland. Like, does he have valid complaints here about what Maryland wants to be as a basketball program and what the reality is? Or is this a coach who, for whatever reason, just didn't like it and was looking for reasons to complain?
I think it's a little bit of all of that. I think it's yes and no. I think some of his complaints were valid. I think the biggest thing that everyone kind of points to is that night in New York back in December when the Terps played Syracuse in Brooklyn, and he was told that his team wasn't allowed to stay overnight in New York an extra night because it cost too much. So, I mean, there were examples like that over the 3 years that, you know, certainly made those complaints valid. But also, I think Willard was just a guy who asked for more and more and more. You know, most of those requests were fulfilled. I mean, one of the details in the piece, you know, the Terps played in Louisville a few years ago. And you know, Louisville Stadium had this you know, kind of private lounge for its donors. And Willard goes to Damon and says, "Hey, let's get that in College Park. Let's get that in Xfinity." And they did that. So I mean, there were certainly times where Willard's complaints were valid over the money and the finances and what was and wasn't possible. But I think ultimately it was more so just a coach who kept asking for more and more and more. And the answer was yes most of the time. And I think that's what kind of pushed Evans out was, hey, I have this coach who's frankly annoying me. And just wants to get out of that relationship.
So if he keeps saying yes, though, and some of these things are fair, is there also a larger structural problem at Maryland for not being able to anticipate some of these things? The fact that Willard had to ask for some of these things where he should have just been able to have them already, because that's the standard that, you know, Maryland claims that they want to be as a top flight basketball program. And the reason I asked that question, Taylor, is because, is this the kind of stuff that Buzz Williams is going to run into as well? Or is this more specific to Willard and particular desires that are more personal to him?
Yeah, I think that remains to be seen with Buzz. I think to the structural part that you mentioned, I think the biggest thing here that, you know, Willard didn't have that a lot of his competitors did have is a GM, a general manager, that a lot of, you know, college football, college basketball teams have nowadays, where the general manager is the one who runs the NIL. He's negotiating the contracts. You know, once revenue sharing comes starting next year, they're going to be the ones handling that. And the coaches to really just focus on the football or focus on the basketball. Willard didn't have that at Maryland. They relied on, you know, volunteers, on donors who kind of stepped up and assumed those roles. So I think that, you know, speaking to the structural part, Maryland just plainly just lagged behind its competition in terms of, you know, the responsibility it put on its coaches, where Willard's having to outsource those duties to volunteers, while, you know, several other teams, even in the Big Ten, have full-time general managers on staff to handle responsibilities.
So is that, like, where does the buck stop with that stuff? Is that a universe? And also, I guess, you know, where does the buck stop is, I think, a general good question to ask about this story. When you look at some of those types of things we've been talking about, or the fact that all this toxicity, Taylor, was allowed to fester and get into the public, is that, does that fall at the feet of Damon Evans? Is that personal responsibility for Willard? Or do you go even higher on the ladder and take a look at university president and be like, hey, man, like, how'd you let this all go down on your watch?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say all three. You know, obviously, in terms of the story getting out, the main people I talked to for the story were donors and boosters, people that were close with Willard and Damon Evans. So obviously some of that onus falls on them, but also Daryl Pines. I mean, Pines is the one who ran the search that led to Buzz Williams and Jim Smith. So, I mean, if you want to go as high as you can up to the top, certainly Daryl Pines bears some of the responsibility here.
So as we wrap up here with Taylor Lyons, sports reporter for the Baltimore Sun, he wrote the investigative piece going inside what happened with Damon Evans and Kevin Willard at Maryland. Very much worth your time in the Baltimore Sun yesterday is when the story came out. We talked about it. Now lucky enough to have Taylor on with us today. Like, where does Maryland go from here? Buzz is a very unique character in college basketball. He's kind of the ultimate plug and play. Just like he's a program in a box. You unpack him, he does his thing, and eventually he packs the box back up and he goes somewhere else. But you also have, as you referenced at the end of the piece, you have a football program that has not won for the level that the coach is necessarily being paid at compared to, if you look around the other people in his pay grade. You have now a bunch of former players who are trying to collect NIL money that they think they're due, and there's potential litigation there. Like, where does Maryland go from here, and what are the most pressing issues moving forward for the athletic department?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot going on. I think in the short term, like you mentioned, the NIL stuff with the former players, they got to figure that out. The thing you're referencing, Jacoby Gillespie, the former guard now at Tennessee, he's taking a collective that Maryland partners with, Blueprint, to mediation over money, NIL money that he claims he's owed. His camp told me that Blueprint stopped paying money after he transferred, even though it did not say in his contract that he would stop getting paid if he transferred. The collective says, no, it did say that in his contract that he would stop getting paid if he transferred. So right now it's just that he said, she said, they're going to go to mediation this month to figure that out. But that's the short term. Long term, I think the biggest question Maryland has is they have to figure out if they want to be a football school or a basketball school. Maryland came out in a press release shortly after Willard left and said that we offered Kevin Willard a contract that would have given him one of the highest revenue sharing budgets and would have made him one of the highest paid coaches in the Big Ten. Now, with the revenue sharing, with the kind of de facto salary cap we're going to have starting next year, that money has to come from somewhere, and it's going to be football. So if they have one of the best funded men's basketball rosters, they're going to have one of the lowest funded football rosters, and vice versa. And like I mentioned too, Loxley, is one of the losingest coaches in the Big Ten over the last 5-6 years that he's been here, and he has a new boss too. So there's a lot to be remains to be seen over the next few years. I'm fascinated to see how the relationships unfold between Jim Smith, Mike Loxley, and Buzz Williams now.
Taylor Lyons, sports reporter on the Baltimore Sun. Taylor, this was a really great piece to read. Good work on all of this, and we look forward to reading what else you write over as we answer the questions you just laid out.
Yep, definitely. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Taylor Lyons with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, Anthony Haney, I just got a text from a good friend who is one of our frequent guests. And you almost caused him to crash out as he was listening. So we have to deal with some show business next. And then we'll get back to the Commanders with our pick six. Anthony is flabbergasted right now. Flabbergasted. We'll handle this next on the Team 980. But first, a look at what's trending.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. I am out in Ashburn. Anthony is in his usual chair Pick 6 and 6 coming at 6 o'clock, where we will get you the 6 most important things that Dan Quinn said today. Then at 6:30, Dietrich Wise, Commander's defensive end. I chatted with him after practice. And Anthony, he was the last one off the practice field. Dude's going into year 9. Everyone else is done. He's literally in a back corner. Like, I thought I missed him. I was like, I was ready to crash out. I was like, I can't believe I missed him. And then in the very back corner, Mitch Tischler was like, wait, is that your guy back there? I was like, that does look like a 91. And he was working on the D-line pads, like we're just happened to be stashed away in a back quarter. And so that's where we started our conversation. You can hear it coming up at 6:30. However, speaking of crashing out, Anthony, earlier in the show, one of our good friends and regular guests was listening. And you played his intro music. And he about lost it. I got a text that said, quote, you played insert artist here, insert song here for a random segment, and I almost called in screaming until I realized it wasn't another guest. Was fully ready to crash out for my theme music. Anthony, do you know who this is?
This is Clinton Yates.
Yes. Oh my. Yes, it is. You played Paramore earlier on in the show.
I did.
And when we play Paramore on this show, that kind of means that Clinton's coming on, except for apparently he was listening, and he was like, I'm not coming on here. Why are you doing this? And you know what's funny, Anthony? I had that thought as you rejoined with Paramore, and it wasn't Clinton. I was like, this is weird, but I don't have time to deal with this right now. Lo and behold, my phone gets blowed up by Clinton Yates because he was listening because he listens. And I was like, you need to take this up with young Anthony Haney. Actually, I'll take it up with Anthony Haney because this is going to be our 5:45 segment today.
All right. First of all, let me defend myself. So, one.
Good luck.
There's been a lot of new music being played today. I just played Migos Stir Fry. I don't think I played that in a long time. Mm-hmm. What else did I play today? I played Pushin' P by Gunna. So, basically, I was just checking this library to see how extensive it was, to see, like, what new artists it had, what new songs it had. And one of the first artists that I had looked up was Paramore. Because usually I have like hotkeys. You know, I have hotkeys with a whole bunch of instrumentals. Mm-hmm. But AMAC had informed me that, hey, they updated the system. There are a lot more songs in there. You can, you know, go search. So as we're about to come back from break, I have Paramore in the search history, like the search bar. And basically, I had to pick a song and then come on air.
So you picked the one that we already use. There's so much new music. Let me.
I mean, I only know 2 Paramore songs. I know Misery Business and I know Ain't It Fun.
And you picked the one that we use for Clinton.
Yeah. That
although he kind of has a claim on too. All of Paramore, to be honest.
There were
on the show.
You said we don't play a lot?
No, I said he kind of has a claim on all Paramore songs on this show.
Yeah.
So your defense, in essence, boils down to you were unprepared to do your job, so you had to panic, and you chose a song that is already assigned to something specific.
Sadly.
Yeah, it's not much of a defense.
And look, I do love Paramore, though.
Yeah,
But Clinton, I will reserve those rights.
I mean, he's literally the only one, I think, that has a fully reserved artist on the show. Because, like, Linnell gets DOA.
Yeah, that is his anthem.
Yeah, but, like, who decided that?
I think the young is in charge.
Yeah, he's not in charge of anything. Yeah. Like, you don't get to take one of the greatest songs of the last 25 years and claim it as your own. It honestly makes me a little mad that you play it for him. Next time Linnell's on, you're not playing that song.
That is a song he uses for all of his shows. You know who else does that, though? Doc Walker.
Yeah, but Doc uses a Dr. Dre song, and he's got Super Bowl rings. He's been doing media for 30 years.
True.
You don't get to be, like, that's the funny thing about Linnell and the youngest in charge movement. He just showed up and said he's in charge. No one actually signed off on it.
He declared it.
He just was like, yeah, I'm in charge now. Like, okay, buddy. Thanks for playing. So, no more Paramore for Not Yates.
Okay.
Linnell gets what he gets. Tischler has requested, I think, some Avicii and air horns.
And he also, did you hear about his new request as well that I sent
yes.
you?
Yes. He did want a full intro from The Rock inspired by your absolutely abominable impersonation of The Rock last week.
Oh, I'm going to make sure I get my reps in. I'm going to get some practice. I'm going to rehearse. I'm going to prepare for this. I'm yeah. taking this personally.
Okay. I think your skill set might not really care how personally you take it, but okay. you know, we can, there's only one way to find out.
Yeah.
Perhaps next week we'll find out. All right. So now that we've got that piece of show business taken care of, 6 o'clock is coming. Our pick six is thus coming. And then a chat with Dietrich Wise here on The Hoffman Show.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.